Welcome to the Association of Schools and Colleges of Optometry's podcast series. ASCO produces podcasts on topics pertaining to the field of optometry, being or becoming a doctor of optometry, academic optometry, and more. Listen to our podcasts through the ASCO website at www.opted.org or ASCO's YouTube channel or iTunes channel. Today's topic is the unconventional student. So what do we mean by unconventional? The unconventional student is a student of optometry who did not enter optometry school directly after graduating college. Today, we're joined by two current unconventional optometry students. Daniel Crawford is a second-year student from The Ohio State College of Optometry, and Gabriel Russell from Salus University, Pennsylvania College of Optometry, who is entering his third year. Dan, let's start with you. Tell us your story, how and when you decided that optometry school is where you want to be.
I majored in biochemistry at Denison University. Beginning the summer following graduation, I began teaching high school math and science. I earned my master's in the art of teaching along the way, too. It was actually while teaching in Chicago that I had my first real awakening to the power and importance of optometry. This was thanks to a mobile vision clinic that would travel through the low-income neighborhoods where my students lived. And on several occasions, I witnessed students transform from frustrated, disengaged, and underachieving to being totally reinvigorated in their learning, really providing an enlightening glimpse into many of the more fundamental challenges impeding learning for my students. So yeah, just the experiential learning excursions provided an enlightening glimpse into many of the more fundamental challenges. It was during the spring of my second year teaching in Denver that it became clear that the model that my school had been following was coming to an end. I was particularly interested in the fun-looking bunch across from me wearing big clown sunglasses. That was the College of Optometry graduating class. And made me think about what a great blend of personality and proficiency there must be in that group was apparent through and through.
Gabriel, tell us your story. How and when did you decide that optometry school was for you?
I'm 38 years old, and at about 16, I took my first eye exam, or had my first eye exam administered to me for the purposes of driving, of course. And I was really just floored by, you know, how quick but how thorough, you know, the doctor was. But what really, I guess, stuck with me was my, I guess, standard of life was changed literally in maybe 15, 20 minutes, and I was able to come back and get my glasses and kind of see a whole new world. So that kind of stuck in my brain.
So wait a minute. Let's back up for a second. You said that at the age of 16, that was the first time that you went to get your eyes checked.
Right.
And it turns out that you did need some sort of vision correction.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So I was going to get my license, and, you know, the lady was like, "You cannot see."
Wow.
So we're not going to let you on the street.
Right. So, and this was a big quality of life change for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, there was a little trepidation there. You know, not only what the optometrist could actually do for you, but then, you know, how skillful the optometrist had to be in order to do that. Going forward into college, I went to Winston-Salem State University in North Carolina. I'm from North Carolina. Met my wife there, much like Dan. We have two young daughters, one that's 17 years old and one that's 5. And they're here with me in Pennsylvania, building my family and whatnot in undergrad, which was an obstacle in itself, but still kind of fueled the fire of you know, wanting to be an optometrist. I never kind of let that idea go. So I have a degree in biology with a chemistry minor. And after I graduated, some of the professors that I learned under invited me back to work at the college. So I was a lab manager and research tech there for the latter years, which, you know, gave me a wonderful platform to kind of feel my way as to what I wanted to do. And I still kept optometry there kind of in the back of my mind. One of the beautiful things about North Carolina is that the school allowed me to take classes, a portion of classes for free. So I was able to kind of beef up the classes that I didn't take in my undergrad to beef up my academic prowess to get into optometry school. So, you know, the burden of, you know, the monetary burden as well as the burden to go to classes was lessened while I was working, because I was working there at Winston-Salem State University. But you know, from there, I went forward to a few programs. One was at ICO in Chicago. It's interesting, Dan mentioned Chicago in 2009. There's a Focus on Your Future program that I went to with Miss Tisha Johnson there, who was the purveyor of that program, and it was really helpful. Kind of opened up your eyes to what optometry is about. But then further, when I got really serious about going forward, because you know it's a balancing act. You know, it's not something that, you know, I'm sure Dan could agree with this too. It's not something that you can just kind of do in a vacuum. You have to consult with your significant other and things like that, and make a plan as to what your action is going to be. And you know, she knew I always wanted to do that, and so she was like, "Look, I think this is a good time." And so there was a program here at Silas University called the SEP program, Summer Enrichment Program, that kind of pretty much simulated the first year of optometry school. And it was a good boot camp because it literally allowed me to see exactly what I was getting myself into. Did I want to go out and you know, invest all this, you know, I guess time and money into, you know, a future? And of course I do, and I did well in the program, and here I am in my third year.
We're talking about the unconventional student in colleges of optometry with unconventional students like Dan and Gabe. And again, both of you are married with families. And Gabe, you mentioned consulting with your wife about
yes,
the path that you have to take. And that's just the reality of being married.
Absolutely.
But again, it's really sort of an unconventional circumstance in which both of you find yourselves. Talk a little bit about how you had to adapt uniquely to life in those various schools of optometry as being older students, being married students. Were there benefits? Were there more challenges? Were there just different perspectives? And we'll begin with Gabe.
From the point that I got my acceptance letter, having to kind of rush up and get housing and things settled for the family, you know, those are things that, you know, students that don't necessarily have family and or you know, a spouse, you know, and or children, or even their significant others that may not be traveling with them. That was, you know, a serious kind of, I won't say obstacle, but it did present a challenge because, you know, you're forced not to think about yourself, but yet think about yourself at the same time.
Yeah.
That duality.
Mm-hmm.
The benefit, I think, and all of those, you know, all of those things inherent to the just the planning for a family and getting things in place, I guess, are the challenges. But the benefit, I think, is, or that I know at this point, is that after that test, after that clinic day, after, you know, studying, you know, all day long, you come home to a unit that loves you, supports you unconditionally. And really, I think the true benefit is being able to feed off of them. So, I mean, there's been plenty of times where I'm like, wow, I have practicals coming up. I have this coming up. And just being able to feed off their positive energy.
So you're saying that your family was almost a great motivator for you.
Oh, absolutely. And North Carolina to Pennsylvania is about an 8.5, you know, 9-hour drive. And I just could not imagine. It's as hard as it is, you know, balancing or doing the balancing act here with them, it would have been 10 times as hard if they would have stayed in North Carolina. There's no question about that. And it's an absolute blessing to have them up here.
Dan, talk about the experience of being a married man in school.
Yeah, I think Gabe said it really well. Just the benefit of having that unit to come home to, I think, is huge. For me, my two girls are a couple of golden retriever lab mix dogs, and then, of course, my wife, and be able to come home to that and have just totally different perspective from the optometry school that you're in all day. You know, that there's, I think, a respect there that makes it work really well.
Do you find that perhaps, say, you're kissing your girls goodnight, that maybe that's a little bit more inspiration to study for that last extra 30 minutes?
Yeah, I think for me, it's kind of a feeling of you're starting with something that's the most important to you and your family, and you get a chance when you go back to school after you have that to kind of build back up from the foundation.
Let's talk a little bit about optometry now as a career choice, obviously a vital part of the healthcare system. What is it that you enjoy most about school?
Yeah, I'd say the biggest thing that I've enjoyed about optometry school, and I think it's true somewhat across professional schools, but particularly with optometry, is everything ties back to the eye. And I was talking to an incoming student yesterday, and I was telling him it's like this rite of passage that you earn after so many years of classes that are pretty broad, and by honing everything back to the eye, it provides a whole new level of meaning to the learning that you're doing. Kind of like knowing why you're learning what you're learning, being able to see how it'll apply to what you're going to do in the future. It's really empowering. And then in terms of advice back and forth, I think Gabe mentioned it, that, you know, you do it with your family to kind of balance optometry school and life within the school, though, having a culture and having a group around you where you can be willing to collaborate and kind of stepping out there. You might, for me, it was kind of this inverted dynamic I had to walk into of going from being the youngest person when I was teaching on staff to now being the oldest person in the classroom, but still really appreciating the perspectives that everybody brings and being willing to open up and collaborate. And everyone's done that without hesitation. I try to do the same and do that while juggling priorities and things like that.
And Dan, have you begun working in clinics yet? Are you directly helping patients?
Yeah, we started in spring of first year, and that was a really refreshing experience.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit. What is that like?
I think it was one of the highlights of the year, being able to get in there, helping patients with the pre-testing, observing third-year students in clinic was basically what we were doing in the spring. And this was as classes were also becoming more and more complex and challenging, and I think seeing the learning I was doing manifest in that patient care provided a motivation to really continue working hard. And I found going from a job where you're working for people, tasks are constantly coming at you on the fly, you move back when you go back to school to the very structured learning environment where getting good grades is really your most direct responsibility in that role. And it's not an easy transition by any means, but having that patient interaction, kind of almost seeking it out whenever you could, helped me stay grounded in the real world that I came from and the one that I get to move back to pretty shortly. And kind of in between, gain all that knowledge, but it was nice to be grounded in the patient care that we started in the spring.
And Gabriel, talk a little bit about working now with patients and in clinics at this stage.
That is kind of like the icing on the cake for your school experience. I mean, your first and second years, getting as much classwork as you can under your belt, and you know, much like Ohio, we're pretty much week one observing the current third years. And fourth years that are rotating through in the clinic. But as a third year, actually, performing all of the skills that you've, passed your proficiencies in on actual patients and meeting patients, it is the most wonderful thing ever. You don't necessarily understand everything, but it comes together very quickly. And I think the beauty of it is that literally there's something that your professor could talk about in class day of, and then you have clinic patient care assignments that afternoon or the next day, and you actually see it. Perfect example was we were talking about low vision and having to use what we call a SOS chart or a low vision chart. The patient can't, see it at a far distance, a 20-foot distance. And I had a patient literally last week who could not, see it 20 feet, couldn't see it 10 feet, and so she was counting fingers, and I said, my goodness, literally, we just got a lecture about this and the ins and outs of it. And but just to be able to meet new people and then provide care in an efficient manner and actually see the things that you're learning about walk through the door and you're faced with it, you have to handle it, and work in tandem with your preceptor, who has, you know, a world of experience as well, to bring that patient's care to a resolution is beautiful. And then even further, you know, going through and managing care, a lot of it is managed care with, you know, MDs and neurologists even, internists that you'll have to deal with. And it's beautiful because you're actually in that role now and kind of, you know, stepping lightly, getting your feet wet without much of the responsibility because you're still a student. But you can feel the weight of what that OD would bring you, and that's a great feeling. What I would tell people as far as advice would be, and I know Dan could probably agree with this, having like real world experience is whether you are young or quote unquote non traditional, or unconventional rather, I would treat your school and your studying like a job, like an 8-to-5. If you can do that and master that and your time management, things will work out a lot better than I think people think. I mean, I treated it kind of like a job from the get-go, and I found out I have more time to kind of spend with my family. So if you don't have a family, you know, you could definitely, you know, spend time working out or going to a movie or, you know, whatever you need to do. It definitely gets hectic at times, but I think the key is time management. And my wife, she's a nurse. She did this kind of tour of duty through school before I did. And her mother gave her some great advice, which was get a cheerleading squad around you, so to speak. So it's for us, you know, for Dan and I, it's our family, right? But for others, yes, it could be their family. But just those who care about you unconditionally and want to see you do well and succeed. And always kind of lean on them if you're having, troubles or just kind of need to talk with somebody or vent air, whatever. Those type people in your corner are priceless.
Certainly. And to have those people who are your family, people that you love as your cheerleaders and as the people to which you are accountable as
Absolutely.
The ultimate motivator. And I'm going to guess, Gabriel, that since you were motivated at the age of 16, getting your first eye exam when you got your driver's license, that now with your 17-year-old girl, that you didn't wait that long to get her checked?
Right, no. She's already been to the eye doctor, you know, plenty of times years ago, back in North Carolina. No, I wouldn't have done that.
For sure. So now we ask this question at the end of every podcast. In your opinion, what does the future hold for doctors of optometry?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the very reasons why optometry more so than anything else, and I did look at med school and other things that kind of stood out, was that it was not so invasive as in compared to other disciplines. So we could kind of look into the eye and, you know, look at those vessels and see actually what's going on in the body. And the beautiful thing, I think, about optometry is that going forward, I truly believe that it is going to be the first stop for many patients, simply because it's virtually a painless visit. Depending on the depth of the, you know, the knowledge base of the optometrist that's in front of you conducting that exam, they can tell you, and we're learning now, how, like Dan said earlier, that everything in the body can be linked back to the eye. And I think if optometry, you know, moving forward, you know, the leaders in our field, as well as Dan and I, go forward and kind of push the envelope on educating patients and letting them know how, you know, an eye exam can really help them to understand, you know, any systemic diseases that they may have or that they don't have. That may be becoming based on their health outlook, you know, as of current. It is a priceless discipline. And so in my belief, that on top of there's different states that now allow LASIK surgeries. There's been talk about even, you know, far off in the future, allowing optometrists to even perform IOLs or or remove cataracts. I mean, that's, it's kind of like sky's the limit. So, I mean, I'm looking at a really comprehensive future for optometry. But then even further, I think as an educational base and kind of as a one-stop, well, I won't say one-stop shop, but definitely the first stop to really looking at the total health of the human being, optometry is, I think, going to be at the right cutting edge of the envelope.
And Dan?
Yeah, I love what Gabe brought up there in terms of, I think, the role that an optometrist can play as a first stop, as a real, you build a relationship with your optometrist. So many times it seems like, as I've shadowed and observed, people are interested and kind of have the ability as an optometrist to build that relationship with the parent. That was huge, or with the patient. It was huge when I was teaching with students and parents. And there's so much potential in that, especially when you have the power to visualize what you can visualize as an optometrist. And, you know, I think as an optometrist, that has become more and more clear as I move into it. It takes advocacy on the part of ODs to keep our scope to where we can really help patients. And I think we do an exemplary job of that. I see in the optometrists that I've been around, it's everyone I meet is just incredibly talented, and it's a community that is ready to challenge norms in the way we think about taking care of eyes, and whether that's in young kids or older adults, post-surgery, all the ways that we can complement healthcare in general. And I see people at our universities that are constantly searching for deeper understandings to optimize that care. I think most importantly, I see a level of creativity and just excitement for the opportunity we have to work with eyes because of how integral they are to the body. And, you know, as technology progresses and schools keep pumping out a terrific caliper of clinician like they are, I don't know if I can imagine the whole scope. You know, Gabe mentioned kind of sky's the limit. And I think it's okay that we don't necessarily know what all the future holds, because we've got a community and they're prepared to take that on and be creative and be excited with it.
One last question. Both of you, as the unconventional student of optometry, any second thoughts about that, or are you locked in and ready for a lifetime in this field?
No regrets. No regrets at all. Personally, I love people. I love science. And I'm not too much of a blood and guts guy.
Mm-hmm.
So literally, optometry is a perfect fit. And you know, I jokingly say, but, you know, 3 years in now, it's too late to turn back. So, no regrets at all.
Good. And Dan?
Yeah, no regrets here either. Definitely stepping away from a profession as you're starting to really get settled into it isn't easy. I reflect on the reasons I did that daily. And in that process, there's never any question. I think part of it is that feeling of, you know, having family, having that foundation, and just how well this fits to be building on that. I know I made the exact right decision.
Thank you for that. And thank you very much, both of you, for your time and participation in ASCO's podcast. For more information, please visit www.opted.org.